says of Jesus, "And seeing the multitudes, he felt compassion for them, because they were distressed and downcast, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest.'" There are some of you here, a large number of you, who haven't yet found that place in God's vineyard where he wants you to work as a laborer. And part of our prayers we share tonight to various people whom God has placed around the world is that he would maybe give some of you a vision tonight. Maybe there will be a word, a seed that is sown in your heart, that it will just begin to grow as a result of something that is said in this room tonight. That 10 years from now, you'll look back to this place and this time and this night, and you'll say, "Well, when that guy said that, I just never could get that out of my mind. And here I am in the middle of wherever God would have you." And we're going to have people coming up and sharing. They're going to be sharing what God's doing. They're going to be sharing needs that they see. And one thing that just amazes me, and I'm sure it would amaze anyone who, and does everyone who's involved in the ministry, is the truth of the verse here of the plentiful harvest and the shortage of laborers. And one of the burdens in my heart, and I know it's in Max's and others, is that somehow we could get the labor supply out into the field where the harvest is, and that somehow we could shake loose what needs to be shaken loose, those limitations that Mike, let's see, what was his last name? I want to call him Sambo. Sabo, there you go, that Mike Sabo was talking about, that somehow that we'd be shaken loose from our limitations and we would be in the places of service where God would want us to be. And so as we share tonight, the spirit in which these men and women are going to share is not a spirit of pride, to where we're saying, "Look what a great job we're doing," and try to outdo one another in terms of what's happening. We're not up here to lie to you. We will tell you the truth. And we're not up here to pit one area of the world against another, to say, "Well, of all the places, this is where God's really doing it, right here." That God is so big that he's doing it in so many places. And so we're going to follow the order that is in your program, starting with Mexico City, and then Max will bring a conclusion to this and may have some other people share. And we just invite those who are speaking to come up to the microphone. There is a trap door here that we arranged during the break, so you be conscious of the time that you were asked to have, because we really were not intending this to be one of those Eutychus meetings that would go on all night. And I know when people get up and they're excited about what God's doing, that it's easy to get carried away, but the trap door does work, and we'll pull the plug on you. So we'll ask Lloyd Mann to come and to begin with one of the most exciting opportunities in the world. And if you've done any study of world demographics, you'll know that by the year 2000, Mexico City will be the largest city in the world. And that's where God has placed Lloyd and Wilma these past few terms as missionaries through the Southern Baptist Mission Board. And they're ministering to students there. And Lloyd, you come and share what's on your heart.
By 1976, my wife and I had been praying for quite a few years already for Latin America. And when we came home on furlough to Norman, Oklahoma that year, God strengthened that vision to pray for Latin America, in part by some time we spent at Glorieta Student Week and Farm Mission Week. And there in the prayer garden, God clarified some of that vision through a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 3, 27 and 28. God is speaking to Moses, and he says, "Go up to the top of Pisgah and look west and north and south and east. Look at the land with your own eyes, since you're not going to cross this Jordan. But commission Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he will lead this people across and will cause them to inherit the land that you will see." And we began to see, of course, that God would never allow us to win Latin America. That's a pretty big task. But what we did see was that God would allow us to recruit and train and encourage and strengthen a bunch of Joshuas who would go out and take the land that we could dream the dreams about. And so we began heading in that direction. That same year while we were on furlough, we were working at that time in the Dominican Republic, which is a small island nation in the Caribbean. Max Barnett asked one of his bomb questions that changed his life. And that question was, Lord, if you're interested in reaching Latin America, is the Dominican Republic the most strategic place to be? Well, it didn't take us very long to decide that no, it wasn't. And for the next 2 years, we sought God's will. And finally, he led us to transfer to Mexico City in 1979. We made the transfer to Mexico City for several reasons. First of all, Mexico is a leader in Latin America. It's respected and looked up to in most of Latin America. It also has a mature church where we would not be crippling the local church by competing for leadership, which we had discovered we were doing in the small country where we were working. And we felt like in Mexico we could attract quality leadership without crippling the local church in its need for leadership. It also has an economy that will allow the country to become a sending nation. Now, it suffered some tremendous economic crisis since 1982, but it still has a stronger economy than the rest of Central America. And we feel like that the day will come when Mexico certainly will be supporting missionaries reaching out to the rest of Latin America. It is now. And we have missionaries on the field from Mexico now. And student work has sent out over 70 missionaries since 1979 to work in other countries. Another reason is that UNESCO reports that over a fourth of all universities in all of Latin America are located in Mexico. It is a country highly given to higher education. There is a tremendous concentration of students in the country of Mexico. We went to serve at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, which has 400,000 students enrolled. That was a year ago. What it is now, heaven only knows. Within the city of Mexico, there are probably nearly a million university students, because there's nearly 500,000 now probably at our university. The Poly is huge. There must be 15 or 20 other universities in the city. We have a tremendous opportunity to reach students. In Mexico, there are dozens of universities with over 100,000 enrollment. And so you can see the tremendous opportunity that there is there in that country. We also went there because there was a team of workers committed to reaching students. We joined a team, and that was a real important thing for us, to have people who would support us and with whom we could interchange ideas, and it has been a great contribution to our ministry there. Let me just share a little bit of what we're doing. As you can imagine, with a university of 400,000, we do a lot of evangelism. And we have between 50 and 80 non-Christians a day into our building. So we have a very strong evangelistic outreach. We have been rather successful in reaching students, getting them growing, and integrating them into the church. This, in our student work in Latin America, is almost a first. Because it hasn't been too successful in making this transition from student work to church. But we have been able to do that, and we have proven ourselves to our pastors that it can be done. And so we feel like that our evangelism has been effective. But as soon as we reach them, we of course begin working in follow-up and continuing to the further part of making disciples. The joy, I think, of our last term on the field has been to see a complete change from the way we began to work. When we went to Mexico, my wife and I did all the evangelism, we did all the follow-up, we did all the discipling. And by the time we left, we had students and couples working effectively in all of those areas, to where we were not the only ones doing it, and to where it got to the point where we didn't even know all that was going on, because it was just everywhere they were working and ministering. And probably the greatest joy is to see at least one person come up through our ministry to the point that today he's a co-laborer with us. And during this year we've been gone, he's been handling the ministry very effectively while we've been gone. But God has allowed us to go beyond just evangelism, follow-up, and basic discipling. He's allowed us to go into leadership training. We've been able to bring people on staff for training. The last year that we were there, we had six people on staff. Of course, six people get swallowed up among 400,000. We could put every one of you there and not even dent the campus as far as that goes. But we had six people on staff, and we're able to do some leadership training for people who hopefully will be reaching Latin America for the rest of their lives. He's also allowed us to reach out into the pastors and the churches, which is something we never dreamed that we'd be able to do. And over the last 2.5 to 3 years, he's given us the opportunity to work with in at least 12 to 15 workshops with pastors all over Mexico. And then to go into Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Panama, and the Dominican Republic to work with pastors of our churches to try to get begun within them this vision of discipling people. We've done it through an instrument which is Master Life. Many of you will be familiar with that tool that God has given Baptists. It's accepted. It has its weaknesses, but it is accepted among our Baptist work, and we're running with it. And God is giving us the opportunity to begin to spark within our leadership of our churches all up and down Central America this desire for something more than just normal, everyday Christian work. What are the greatest needs? I would say, first of all, just prayer support. I would hope that you would be praying daily as we are, God, raise up laborers, because there's a tremendous field there. And we need laborers. We need people who are trained to disciple people to reach these thousands and thousands of university students. We need you to ask God to put us in contact there at the university where we're working with people who will be faithful and grow and reach out and minister. We also need your prayers that the convention will continue to support us, because we depend totally on the Mexican Baptist Convention for all of our financial and personnel support. We'll be going back into a rather rough convention just about 2 weeks after we return to the field next week. We will have to convince the convention to keep the support for reaching students, because there are some who don't really think that it needs to be kept up. The second need, I'd say, is for workers. We have, as I said, dozens of campuses with over 100,000. We have every year requests from churches and from associations to the convention requesting student workers. We don't have people to send to them. We've received one missionary couple who will be appointed, who will be coming down in for language study in January. But in the meantime, we've lost a couple. And so we still have a great need for those of you who have this vision and will be willing to plant your life in Mexico to try to reach these students. We're excited about being there. It's a great ministry, great opportunity. And as I've said many times, I will gladly give the next 20 years of my life, because I know that 30 years, 50 years, 60 years from now, there's going to be hundreds and perhaps even thousands of people who are doing the same thing because of what God is doing. We're excited about the fact that He's not only allowing us to spread this vision in Mexico and at our university, but even through Central America. And we just recently got word from some of our bosses that there may be a possibility of bringing young men and young women from other Central American countries to come on staff for training, so that they can get some own or some actual experience in the discipling ministry, because there are no other role models in Central America among our Baptist work for this kind of ministry. So pray for us. And if any of you don't know where you're going to plant your life, we'd invite you to consider with God Mexico.
Hello, I'm Dave Bartow, and we're in Vancouver, British Columbia, and we're seeing God do some pretty exciting things there also. We've been there 5 years now, and originally went from a campus in Kansas to help establish a young church that had just started there in Vancouver, and so spent 3 years kind of as associate pastor and trying to help disciple many of the young converts that had come to know Christ in our church. Our church, even till today, has percentage-wise, about 90% of our members have become Christians through our church. And this is the first church, pastor, first experience they've ever had at knowing God and walking with Him. And so it's been quite a challenge just to disciple all those young believers, and been very exciting. But then 2 years ago, God answered a real longing of our heart, was that we could get back into student work. We're still part of the church, associate pastor there, and helping continue to see that church grow and make a difference there. But for 2 years now, we've been at the University of British Columbia as a BSU director there, first full-time BSU director they've ever had. And boy, it's been very exciting. In our greater Vancouver area, which includes Victoria Island, Vancouver Island with Victoria, there's 22 campuses, and until about a year ago, I was the only one doing student work in that area as far as BSU work. And so it's been very exciting. God's answered our prayers in the last year, I'll tell you about in a minute, and bringing some laborers to help out. But let me give you some statistics real quickly that I learned shortly after moving to Canada that really kind of surprised me. Canada on the map was always that yellow country north of the U.S., you know, it's just all yellow, you know, and now it's interesting looking at maps in Canada, the country below Canada's all yellow, and Canada's and that's typical of the mindset, I think, that's what's happened. I think we've assumed here in America that surely Canada is being at least as much reached as we are in America. Not that we're doing that good a job here, but it must be at least as spiritual or reached or Christianized as we are here. And I got there and it was a real shock to find out it's not even close. The last major national survey in Canada revealed that only 6.7% would even claim to be Christian. And an article came out in our paper last year in Vancouver showing that they did a major survey in our city, and they found that from every existing known breed of church in Vancouver, I mean, including Buddhist temples and all the mosques and the Sikh temples and all that, every kind of church known, they found out how many were participating in every church, and found only 2% will go to any church any given week in our city. That's not just Christian churches, that's any of them. And so what we're looking at is an incredibly secularized pagan country that's just lost God in the shuffle of life. And that's been a real shock to us, but it's been an exciting thing to see the guys allowed us to go and try to make a difference. And it's overwhelming at times. We moved to Vancouver not only to do student work and to help some churches, but over the long haul, by God's grace, to somehow be used with Him to raise up some laborers that can go all the way across the country and make a difference. Currently, as far as our churches, we have one church in Canada for every 480,000 people. And when I was leading a mission conference last year in Texas, I heard their goal was to start 2,000 new churches so they can get the ratio down from 1 to every 3,000 down to 1 to every 2,000 people in Texas. That means Southern Baptist churches per person. And then I looked at our stats, and one for every 480,000 people, and I thought, oh God, somehow, communicate your heart to your people. Somehow do that. I can't do it. I don't know where to begin. And I just began to earnestly long for God to impress upon His people, wherever He's stirring in the heart, to begin to show the bigger picture across the world in some of the areas that the needs are incredible. One of them happens to be Canada. One of the exciting things that we're seeing God do now is we've, in the 5 years there, being very active as we can be in our association and our national convention now, we've seen God do a real special work. And what that work is that He's communicated to the hearts of the churches that we do have and the pastors that we do have that the number one priority for starting new churches across our country should be that whenever there's a choice between starting a church in a place where there is no campus and starting a church in a place where there is a campus, that we ought to start where there's a campus. And God's done that. There's been a heart developed to see the strategic role of reaching and discipling students who will become the laborers, the Canadian laborers anyway, to reach our country. And so that's become a major strategy and goal of our whole convention. to start student work in conjunction with starting and planting new churches across our country. Until 2 years ago, we had no church east of Winnipeg, Manitoba. Now, Winnipeg's about due north of where we're at sitting right now. We had not a single church east of Winnipeg, which contained well over half the population of our nation. In the last 2 years, God's allowed a group of Haitian churches to come into the convention and two other churches to get planted over in the Toronto area, and we sent three of our students this summer to go help plant some other churches in Toronto. So there's a stirring, but my goodness, the needs are just incredible, really. If I had to summarize what I would see as the greatest needs that we have right now in our area of Vancouver and our country of Canada, the number one would have to be laborers. It would just have to be that. Actually, Lloyd Mann and I could have compared notes at this point. I mean, it's going to be probably the common theme of the needs. It's laborers. It really is. Qualified laborers who will plant their life for a significant amount of time and allow God to use them to raise up indigenous laborers, Canadian laborers on the field. The second greatest need I see is for resources. The greatest resource I see we need is for prayer. One of the things that we, in our little local area there, among the pastors and those of us that are doing student work now, sense is a burden that God's given us. It's a burden to raise up a group of people who will pray consistently for our area and for Canada and the needs that we'll be able to communicate with them over a period of time. Pray for our nation. And we're asking God to give us 100,000 people by name who will be praying consistently for our nation. Because the reality of what the need is just overwhelming. We realize unless God does something, there's no way we're going to reach Canada. Unless God does something and moves in our midst and allows us the privilege of raising up genuine, qualified laborers who will give the rest of their life to doing the same thing, we won't dent our country. And so the greatest resource is prayer. Boy, we're dead serious about that. The second greatest resources would be probably financial. No one's standing in line to do student work in Canada. And one of the reasons is nobody's offering salaries to do it there. It's just not there. Out of the 80 Southern Baptist churches we have in Canada, the average congregation is about 40. And so that even the churches that do exist don't have the type of resources to even significantly take care of their pastors, much less add other staff and national staff and state staff and that kind of thing. So God is going to need to raise up some others in other areas who will help financially. And so you can just be asking God to match the laborers that He leads to come with the resources. That's one of the things you can be praying. And one of the things that excites me about where we're at, and I totally agree with what everybody said so far, that one campus and one area of the world definitely is not any more strategic than another, really, when you think of it, the whole world needs to know Christ. One of the things that excites me about Canada is because of its strategic role in the world right now. It's a country that's seen as neutral as any country in the world, and it has entrance into other countries, some of the very countries that are closing their doors to Americans. There's just no problem of our people getting into other countries, and the Foreign Mission Board already is communicating with us about the possibility that when other countries close the doors to Americans, that if we have Canadian laborers ready to go, that they could be sent through a Foreign Mission Board to those countries and take over that work and keep it going and reach other things like that. So that's an exciting, extended goal that we have, to raise up laborers that won't just go across our country, but literally go across the world. And it's begun to happen, but it's slow right now. To give you a clue, just one of the things you probably would wonder, what I did at first too, with Canada being so incredibly lost and pagan and secularized, are people even open for the gospel? And my first answer to that question is, if you expect to go up to someone with a tract and a testimony, and by after 30 minutes of spending time with them that they've received Christ and they're going to happily go on their way and grow the rest of their life, it's not open to the gospel if that's the approach. But the exciting thing is, every person, just about every person, Star and I and others in our body, have on purpose developed friendships with and begin to love and serve. Every one of them has been open to the gospel. Every single one. We've not by plan or design moved five times in the 5 years we've been there in Vancouver. It's been a little bit out of our control. I think we're settled for a while now. But one of the exciting things is every place we've lived, we've had some neighbors come to know Christ. And that's exciting. People definitely are reachable in our area if you'll lay your life down for them and love them and serve them and minister. And so I wanted to communicate that up front with you. One of the things we're asking God to do, and I'll close with this, is when we first went there, God reconfirmed a promise, to re-emphasize a promise in my own life. It's in Isaiah 58, verses 10 through 12. It says, "If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom will be as the noonday, and the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire with good things, and make your bones strong, and you'll be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not." And then the last verse says, "And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt, and you shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in." And I feel like God's saying, Jay, and any of the others he's led there so far, feel the same burden. If you'll just give your life, I will accomplish something. I will allow you to raise up the foundations of many generations to come spiritually. And there's a fresh moving of God right now in our country. I know there is in our city. Something like I've never seen in my lifetime. Last year we had the World's Fair there, and God, about a year before that, in a prayer time, we had communicated that he wanted us to get right involved in that. And we were so little and tiny and over, we had more on our plate than we could eat already. But he said, "I want you to get involved," and so we did. And one of the exciting things as we look back over what God led us to do during that World's Fair is we saw over 100 persons per day come to know Christ at that fair. God is up to something I've never personally seen or been a part of. There's something special going on. And I'm excited about that. I'm convinced that God's going to communicate to the specific hearts of people that he wants to lay their lives down there to do that. The doors are wide open. The needs are tremendous. And I would count it a tremendous privilege if you'd be on that prayer team to pray for us. And if you would like to get a mail out to some of the needs as they come out month by month, I'd be happy to put you on that if you'd give me your name and address. Thank you.
My name is Joe Rust, and I'm currently in Berkeley, California. So far, I've decided to go to Mexico City, and then I changed my mind, and now I'm going to the Yellow Country, and we're in between there. You've seen that peninsula? I mean that the coastline that comes above Mexico and just south of the border, so to speak. It's interesting, Dave, that when I went to Canada years ago, that I had those same verses that were real special to me, that in Isaiah 60:22. And I think it is really special to hear from people about what they're doing. I really wish that many of you could be here and share, and I really would know that people would covet the opportunity to hear from you. A surprise happened to me along the way of doing some student work in years past, and that was God converted me to a pastor. And some of you who have known me in the past still aren't over that shock. As a matter of fact, some of the people who I minister among and with are still trying to work through that themselves. It's interesting to have joined the ranks of some people that, as a BSU director, that I've had some interesting relationships with through the years. Those of you who have been a student for a few years, you'll know what I mean by interesting. And one of the questions that has been asked me, and I'm sure that many of you here have been asked this question, that is that what has God spoken to you about that has given you a vision for wanting to be among Southern Baptists to make disciples. And you know that many of you here know that you've had a price to pay to do that. You've had to earn the right to carry out a ministry that has sometimes been difficult for others to understand and to have a vision for themselves. And you know, as I came to this conference, I was really excited about it because I've really desired to get together with some of the brethren who are like-hearted. And I've been thrilled to see, as I'm sure you have, the group that's gathered here tonight. And the age of the group. This is a little older group, and with some experience and some years. And you know, when some of us were around in the early days, of course, everyone has their early days, but you know, there wasn't but a handful of people around. And I was sharing with someone earlier that the only book that we could refer to that had something in print, like what we were trying to do, was Robert Coleman's book, The Master Plan of Evangelism. There wasn't a single other resource I knew of. And then, of course, the Navigators, Leichhardt's. And to have a group like this assembled is really encouraging. You know, a lot of work has been done. And we have a lot of thanks and gratitude to offer people who have really helped us become what we are. And so I got converted to be a pastor. And many of you here are planning to go to seminary soon. And God has a wonderful way of reorienting us to do things and to see things that we've never seen before through that marvelous process of a few years of study. And I just never would have seen that I'd be doing what I'm doing today after a number of years of student work and really thinking a great deal about wanting to go overseas on a campus somewhere. And I've never really given up that dream. And what really has happened is that I'm doing it a different way. I want to tell you about it just real briefly. One of the things that I've had in my heart that has enabled me to be encouraged and excited and privileged about being a Southern Baptist is that I've really desired to see God get a hold of what I see is a great untapped resource of manpower and money and mobilize that in the Great Commission. I believe there's a real setup here among Southern Baptists to do that, a real missionary sending force. Really want to see that happen with people who have in their hearts the concept of raising up laborers. And we're seeing that happen. You know, this conference is a result of that. When I was in seminary, just 3 months before I was to graduate, I had been in touch all along with the Foreign Mission Board and was desiring to go overseas to do student work. And 3 months before I was to graduate, the Foreign Mission Board changed their policy to require people to have 2 years postgraduate experience. And the head of the personnel department of the Foreign Mission Board himself came out to tell me this. They made no exceptions of it, and certainly I wasn't one. And it was a real opportunity to get real discouraged or angry. And I was so aware that, you know, this was such a major thing happening here. In some sense, a dream that was being redirected, rechanneled. And I was really aware of God's presence, and I was just asking the question to Him as I was listening and sharing with the fellows from the Foreign Mission Board. All right, what do you want me to do now? I don't have an alternate plan. That was it. And I still remember as I was in seminary to see guys approach graduation with having no idea of what they were going to do. And I thought to myself, I'm certainly not one of them. And God has a way at getting at attitudes, doesn't He? And I had a wonderful opportunity to really seek Him. And I don't think anyone has been searching longer than I have for what God really wanted me to do. You know, I mean, you may feel alone, but I think I have surpassed your efforts. And so if any of you out there are wondering that, I want to encourage you that God really has it and doesn't make mistakes. And he really has something for you, a place for you. Those of you looking and crying to the Lord about what he wants you to do. Some of you may not be assured that you're in the right place right now, but God really has something in store for you. If you would but seek him and wait upon him, things will really clear up. And that's what happened to me. As I graduated, I continued to do what I was doing in seminary, and that was selling cars. And so I sold, continued to sell cars full time, ended up selling Mercedes-Benz in Marin County and north of San Francisco. And, you know, I really thank God for that experience, because selling cars really opened my eyes to people. But that's another story. I felt God prompting me about starting a church in Berkeley. And I thought, you know, you couldn't be talking about me. I mean, starting a church, and I mean, I've never done that. And, you know, a pastor, I mean, you know, that's not me. And God continued to really lead in my life, and then really confirmed that he wanted me to do that. Now, some of you here are thinking about doing some things, or perhaps might have an opportunity that you shouldn't pass up, and that is where you have to take a risk. And maybe some of you here are already ones who have begun a ministry and started it from scratch with no one, just yourself. And I think that takes a special kind of person. But you may be one person like that, and God may want you to do something like that. In California, everyone that shared, you know, you can kind of just stamp the same statistics in a lot of the people who are sharing. I just wanted to share a few, but they're very like what people have shared here. The area that God was prompting me to do something about, the area of Berkeley, California, the Bay Area of Northern California, has about 95% of the people there unchurched. I mean, it is not something that just comes to mind. You know, they're indifferent to the aspect of religious life. Out of the huge population in California, 21 million people are unchurched. The Southern Baptist situation, which is needful, is best described like this by our current executive of the state convention there, C.E. Hogue. He did a little survey and some research and found out that the average age of a Southern Baptist church member was 59.7 years of age. Do you see what's happening there? By the year 2000, a recent commission person said to me that Southern Baptists just may not be in California. At least men, some of the ladies may live a little bit longer than that, but... The average age of a native Californian is 27.9 years of age. Our churches are not in danger of reaching too many of them very quickly. There's a lot of need. It's interesting, having been in student work where sometimes it's not understood to be the greatest priority. Some people have already said that tonight. You know, you may feel that way. You may feel like, in some sense, you're a second-class citizen because you have a vision for students. I want to tell you that I don't think there's any higher calling than that. And I want to say, too, that it's interesting for me to be on the other side, to where I now stand at the threshold of seeing some things happen to fulfill the number one Southern Baptist priority in terms of manpower and money, and that is to plant new churches. And why can't I do that near a college campus, a major college campus like the University of California in Berkeley, do what I would have done anyway if I were a student director, and yet do more and call it a church and have everyone's blessing? And as a matter of fact, to have people literally falling all over themselves to want to help me, and rightly, you know, that should be not because you know, there's anything in my life that is worthy of such attention, but because unless we do something in California, in fact, we won't survive the year 2000. There are people at the state convention level, and this should be a real encouragement to people here of what can happen, who really see the only hope for Southern Baptists in California guys like me, there are other guys around like me, who are starting afresh and trying and dreaming dreams of reaching unchurched, indifferent non-Christians in California. And if we don't figure out how to do that pretty soon, we just flat won't be there. So California is just a needy place. Isn't it interesting? Everyone thinks that their place is needy, and that's true. I just want to close by sharing something that we're doing and wanting to learn it. You know, I really feel like I have a lot of lessons to learn. I'm really excited to be a learner. Nothing like getting on a new challenge, a new project, to really get the blood to flowing again. If there's ever been a hardening of the viewpoint, getting on the mission field, so to speak, and seeing where you're at as a mission field is nothing like becoming a real excited and hungry learner again. We're desiring to reach people like this through some ways and means of which Jim Peterson kind of helped prompt in our minds, and that is to try to use the greatest resources that we have available to reach people who are indifferent to the gospel. And let me just real quickly put that in a real life situation of how our first activity got started in University Church, Berkeley. That's what we call ourselves. We have our anniversary July 4th, by the way. July 4th, 1986, we designed a barbecue volleyball picnic, Tillman Park, behind the campus there, kind of a wilderness park area. And we asked people who knew of any people who lived in the area who weren't Christians. We weren't interested in other Christians, unchurched, non-Christians, to bring their friends to this neutral activity. And to keep my contract with them, and that's very important, it was not to be a religious meeting. I didn't come there to preach at them. But I did intend to share a survey with them. And so after being there a while to play some volleyball and stuff, to see that, to allow them to see that we did things the same way they did and we were okay and we weren't from some strange planet, we gathered around and I asked them, I told them about who we were, and I asked them if they were to be interested, not that they were, but if they were to be interested in an investigative Bible study for themselves, a chance to investigate this most famous book for themselves without someone having to tell them what it said for them, in an atmosphere where they could have any opinion they wanted to have, say anything they wanted to say, say this is ridiculous, this doesn't work, and other adjectives like that, to be as skeptical as they wanted to be and expressive as they wanted to be about it, if they had the chance to investigate for themselves, and I had the survey, which kind of personal investigation in the Bible would you like? And I had seven different ways, and I asked them just to order in terms of priority, top three, and go for it. Boy, they all split up. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, they all split up and just instantly did it. Came back, gave me the old things. You know, kind of like this was their service, and you know that was kind of surprising. And I thought, great. Well, that's out of the way. And we had some fun, split up. And the hard thing was going to call them back and say, well, I've looked at the surveys, and this is what we're going to do. Would you be interested? Now, you didn't say that you were wanting to do this, but how about a time and place? Would you like to be a part of this? And you know, something very, very interesting. We got, to that picnic, we got about 40 people. 20-some were unchurched non-Christians. The rest were the friends who brought them. You know that we got almost every one of those 20 people in an investigative Bible study? And I didn't figure that would happen. And many of them are very close now to becoming Christians. Some recently have become Christians. And we found it's not really an order of priority here, though it probably could be, but just wrote this down real quickly, that some of our greatest resources come to bear when we do it like this. Number one, God's Word. That people get into the Word for themselves. And we don't tell them what the Word says, quote a verse to them, but they have a chance to investigate for themselves in an atmosphere in which they can do that without harm or hooks or strings attached. And secondly, the Holy Spirit himself has promised to work in their lives and to take the Word and bear that upon where they're at and take them a step further. Third, prayer. I heard Leroy say one time that there are four principles of ministry. One is prayer, and the second one is prayer, The third one is prayer, and the fourth one is what you just get with the people then. And that's the fourth thing here. Then you get with them. And we, you know, and in a conference on disciple making, it's interesting that in the midst of talking about all the things that we do and should do, it's interesting that, you know, as I get older in ministry, it really is kind of humorous to me how little I discover I do and how much God does. We just kind of get with them, and I'm surprised sometimes it doesn't have to be good and God does things, you know. It's just amazing. So that's what we're doing. That's what we want to do. And 1 Corinthians 9, in the last year, Paul says, I won't read it now because Paul says basically, though I'm free and belong to no man, starts in verse 19 and goes to the end of the paragraph there, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. The whole paragraph there is, you know, talking about how he adapts himself to people. The issue is, who are you going to make comfortable? Who's going to be comfortable? You or them? And we try to adapt ourselves to them to make them comfortable to have a hearing in the gospel. And so if you pray with us that we would learn how to do that more effectively, that would be just tremendous. Thank you.
About 10 years ago in April, I was at Glen Eyrie, and my dream then for my ministry, I had been involved in the BSU that had a world vision at Baylor University, and so my dream, being adaptable to world vision, was to stay at Baylor and work on the staff there. I thought that would be the epitome of world vision. And it was a great disappointment in my life that April to realize that I was not going to be able to stay at Baylor University. And not only that, somebody I knew was. And I was very angry at God then because I was really committed to make my life count. And I thought that the best place to do that was Jerusalem on the Brazos. And interestingly enough, about 2 years after that experience, I found myself one November at the campus of San Francisco State University. I walked on campus as the new director of the Baptist Student Union, green as I could be, and went to our little booth for the Join the Club Day, and I noticed that our Baptist Student Union booth was right next to the gay lesbian kissing booth. And then I was really mad at God because I thought, you know, this is too much. But after about 2 hours of observing and talking to students, I realized, you know, that's probably where Jesus Christ would be. Was right there next to the gay lesbian kissing booth, meeting those people and talking to those students. I've been in California now. This will be my 8th year. I went there when I was 14. And I wrote up a sheet here that I'd like for you to look at later that has some specific needs. I work in Southern California, which is a different culture from Northern California. But I would like to just share a few things because I think there's a very strategic thing happening in California. But just so you can get a little bit of a perspective on that, Los Angeles County, where I labor, has 161 universities total. Not all of those are accredited, but about 161 universities. There is one full-time BSU staff person in that area at this point that is employed by the state convention. By comparison, the entire state of Oklahoma in 1887 had 42 campuses, 40 BSUs, 52 directors, and 150,000 students. So it kind of helps you get a little bit of a perspective on the strategy that God may be about in a meeting like this. California has three times the number of students as Texas, and operates with one-tenth of the budget. The exciting thing about that, though, is that God's Word teaches that God is not limited by that. God's not limited by that. And I think God has a very specific strategy for California that is involving disciple-making. And because of the resources that we have, I think that we have a vast door to really reach people. Just a few reasons why I think California is strategic in world evangelism and world discipleship. One is the population, obviously. 1.8 million students in California. A second reason is the great diversity. In the Los Angeles County Public Schools, there are over 200 languages spoken. Now, interestingly enough, California just in the last election voted, if you can imagine, that English is the official language of California. But there are still over 200 languages in public schools. So there's great, not only great numbers of people, but great diversity. And if we're committed to personal discipleship, that means that we have great potential. And California has great wealth. If California were a country, it would be the second wealthiest nation in terms, if it were a nation, it would be the second wealthiest behind the United States in gross national product. Great resources. And we will reach California through reaching people and through the process of multiplying our lives and the lives of others. There are several challenges that we face on campuses in California. I try to narrow them down to two. And I'd like for you to think for just a minute, if you were there, what would you do about these two challenges? The first is diversity. What would you do if you were planning to reach a campus, a particular campus that had hundreds of different languages, perhaps, students from hundreds of different countries? I have a picture in my slide presentation of a Bible study, small group on campus. There are about 10 students there. The age range was from 17-year-old freshmen to a 64-year-old man. There were three black students, one Hispanic, and the rest Caucasian. Now, what would you do if you were the BSU director in that arena? Great diversity. That's a challenge. The second challenge is, how are we going to reach students that commute? 1.8 million students. The vast majority of those students do not live in a dormitory. They commute to campus. The average student at Long Beach State works 28 hours a week, takes 12 units of classes. How are you going to reach that student? He's not got time to kill. And so how are we going to reach him? Two big challenges. One of the things we are learning is that we reach them by targeting a ministry that's especially designed for them. Now, that's why laborers are so important. I tried to do something with the football team, but they wouldn't listen to me. And see, if you're talking about a target group ministry that's specialized on people's need, we need specialized laborers that can reach out to that group. I told a story about the gay kissing booth, and I hate to tell that story because sometimes when I say that, people feel sorry for us. Oh, poor thing. But I want to share with you that I have never been in a place in my entire life where I was more happy than in California. And when I have opportunity, I have to kind of bite my tongue not to say that I think everyone should be there. But the truth is, if God calls you there, there are great opportunities. And I'd like to just share three. One is because California, like many of these other areas, is on the cutting edge of the world. It is a bellwether state. And as California goes, so goes the nation. That's been a switch in the last 20 years from New York to California and the West Coast. The cutting edge. And because of that, it's exciting to be there. A second reason why I'm very excited that God has called me to that state is because it gives me an opportunity to be creative under the convictions that God has given. My third semester at San Francisco State, our director of missions informed a friend and I that we had 50 cents left in the budget. And we had not spent anything, but they... the association's having a tough time. We had 50 cents. Now, I learned to be creative. It ties in, though, with my third point. California lets you be on a cutting edge. It lets a person be creative. But finally, California, for me, has been a crucible for my faith. In 1 Samuel, Jonathan tells his honor bearer, God is not restrained by many or by few. Now, I learned that in Sunday school, but I learned that with parents who took care of me, with parents who helped pay my way to school. I honestly did not ever have to trust God with anything financial. I had never felt like I couldn't somehow figure out a way to do something. But since I've been in California, God has shown me that His strength is made perfect through weakness. That I wish that we didn't. I wish we had more money. I wish that we had more laborers. A lot of things I might wish. But probably the best thing that has happened in Long Beach has not been what's happened on campus. It's been what has happened in my heart as God has proven Himself strong. Now, if some of you would like to give $1 million, or if many of you would like to come work, I would be happy to receive that. But the bottom line is, that for me has been a place that has been a crucible for my faith. And God has given an opportunity, has been given an opportunity to prove himself strong. One quick story. This last semester, when we only had 50 cents in our budget, I began to pray for the first time in my life. I honestly prayed, God, if you don't do something, we are in trouble. I'm a seminary student. I can't pick up the money. And our ministry team began to really pray. And 3 days later, I was at a dinner at a man's home, and his wife said to me, Debbie, have you talked with Bill about the money? And I said, what money? I said, no, I hadn't talked to him. And Bill Pinson came up and said, Debbie, he said, I've talked with a man in Texas, and he's decided to, at that point, he had 50 cents in our budget, and I got paid $350 a month to do student work. And so he said, this man has decided that he wants to give you $350 a month just for you. He doesn't want you to spend that on BSU. He wants to spend that on you. And whenever you have a need, you let me know, and I will let him know. And he says if he's able, he'll meet that need. And my last two semesters at seminary, that's what happened. My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. My prayer is that God will call some of you to California, not because we need you, although we do, but because that will be the arena that God has chosen for you to build a crucible of your faith.
Well, we've heard some good things. I'm not quite as eloquent as those before me, and I don't have the statistics that shine like they do. I'm from Kansas, and gee whiz, Kansas is just kind of vanilla. I don't know what to say. I mean, they're just wheat fields and grain elevators. So, in 1971, I was dodging incoming artillery in Vietnam, and I received a letter from Max, and he and Brett Yon and Larry Woods and a few others had made a trip up through Kansas and Nebraska and Iowa, just looking over campuses with the idea of possibly starting new BSUs at some of the major universities in those areas that did not have student work. And they asked me to consider going to Kansas State University in Manhattan, and I didn't need to pray about that too long, really, because back when I was a student, I had decided that I was just open to what God brought along that gave me an opportunity to make disciples. And the opportunity presented itself, and I felt peace about it. Sandy, my wife, felt peace about it. And so within a few months after I returned from overseas, we were on our way. Sandy and I and Brad and Mary, we traveled in one U-Haul truck up north. Our stuff was packed in the back, and they kicked us out in Kansas, and then they went on up to Lincoln, and I never felt more alone in my life on that campus of 18,000 students and extremely precious few Southern Baptists. It's amazing when you cross the Oklahoma-Kansas border, that one little inch of distance makes a humongous difference as far as the number of Southern Baptists. And that was certainly true in our community. But we began to do what the Lord had laid on our heart, sharing our lives with people, sharing the Lord, beginning to spend time with them, having them into our little apartment. And God began to really bless. And we've been there 15 years. We moved there in 1972. And it's just so encouraging what God has done. Just a couple hours ago, we were having dinner with, I believe, 8 families that are former K-State alums that came in for this conference, just all over the country, really. And, you know, it's encouraging. The key on whether it's working or not is not how many are attending your program on your campus. It's 8 or 9 years down the road, whether they're still hanging on and hanging in there. And it was, I had moist eyes tonight just being around those couples and seeing their faith in the Lord and how they're walking with Him through the years. And it was such an encouragement to me. And it kind of, I guess, gave me a charge that, hey, I need to keep on keeping on. And even though at times it's difficult, this past few months has been bittersweet in a lot of ways. We've seen some dear, godly young students grow, and the commitment level is so strong, and yet just recently I've seen a dear person that's been in our ministry literally wash out spiritually, and I've gone both spectrums of the emotional plane in just recent weeks. But that's what happens when you give your life to people. You set yourself up to be hurt if they don't make it down the way, and that's part of the cost. And you have to be willing to live with that if you're going to get close to people. I mentioned we've been in Kansas State 15 years. I moved there when I was 24, and I realized that I, age-wise, I was beginning to go over the hill just recently when I was over in the dorms visiting one of our students, and a friend down the hall of his came up to him later. This friend had been cussing or something, and came up to him and apologized to him and said, "Hey, I'm sorry for cussing. I didn't realize that was your dad." And I said, "Hey, I'm not that old, really. I have had to change a little of my methodology in the years, but it's been great to be in Kansas. You know, it's encouraging to look back and to think back, what would I have rather done in the last 15 years? And just ponder that, and you need to consider that too. Is there anything that you would rather have done? And, you know, I really can't think of anything. Oh, I enjoy flying airplanes, and I would have enjoyed going into coaching and that kind of stuff. But the long haul, boy, it's been great to be a campus minister and to be a part of God's, advancing God's kingdom on earth. Kansas and Nebraska is a very fruitful field. We've seen students reached and go out around the world, literally, as laymen and missionaries. And right now we have a team of campus ministers in our two-state area that are united together. We plan the work together. We pray together. We cry together. And we're kind of one happy family. We just recently had about 3 days together at a retreat center, and just such a joy to be with like-hearted people. And you know, if you would like to come, I can't offer you the some of the things that Berkeley can, but yeah, it's really a neat place, Kansas and Nebraska. We you know, we could really show you a good time there, and you know, it's amazing, even though you know, the statistics may not light up yet. I haven't met anywhere that's really saturated with Christian workers. At Kansas State now we have about 19,000 students, and we're probably we and Campus Crusade are probably the two largest groups on campus, and boy, we're reaching such a few people, and the international community is so open. We just saw our first mainland Chinese come to Christ this past semester, and they're open, and oh, if we had someone to work full-time with international students, my mouth just drools at that. And so it's really a good opportunity, and we're so encouraged with what God is doing, and He is faithful to what we're up to.
Bob's been on the field one day longer than I have. One of the things that we've learned about the Midwest is that there is tremendous soil in the Midwest, in the lives of people as well as the earth, and it's just tremendous soil that once God's word takes root in the heart and lives of the people there, Those people just go on. And they keep producing. And they keep multiplying. And it is exciting to have been someplace only 15 years and to see so much happen, because that's just kind of the way the people are. And I think we find different soils of people in different parts of America. And one place where we need to concentrate workers is where you get a lot of multiplication. And one of those places is in the Midwest. It isn't very much fun there, to be truthful. I get tired of shoveling snow and looking for the mountains. I haven't found them. And there's not a lot of beach life there. The fishing isn't very good. We do have good football, however. It's an excellent sending place, a place to raise up people and send them. It's an excellent place to learn. I think that I guess the way Bob and I have postured ourselves in the ministry, that we pretty much determined God has us there for a few more years, and that one of the things we want to do is not bring in people and keep them there for the rest of their lives, but bring in people and give them a chance to really prove themselves in the ministry and to give them that experience they need in order to send them out to places that might be a little more difficult than the Midwest, although it isn't easy where we are. And part of this vision, it's not really intentional. I think it's just part of what God's done. God sent us Dave Bartow for a while, and he kind of got his feet wet, and now he's in Canada, and Ray Crawford went over to Colorado. Scott Smith is in Hong Kong, and John Sapp is in Southern Africa, and I wrote some names down. And Sheila Jones is getting ready to go to Canada to help Dave Bartow to work with women. And then the two guys who have taken the hardest job are Dave Edwards and Scott Haddon, who've come to Oklahoma to help Max out here. And that's a real joy, because Max has meant so much to us, and to be able to send back to him some blessing. There have been times Bob and I would have loved to have been here. And it's just a blessing to see the fruit produced and then come back and bless the people here in Oklahoma. And so that's part of the joy of working in the Midwest. One of the opportunities we have, I think, is to influence how Southern Baptists do student works all across the newer convention areas. Just as God would be sovereign, our state executive director of all the Baptist shindig in Nebraska and Kansas really likes students. He's given Bob and I free rein. He has campaigned to get more money to do student work. He's helped us. And he has somehow, over the last 5 years, gotten the ear of the Home Mission Board and said to them, hey, let us experiment. And let's see if we can put some actual, real money into student work in newer convention areas. And so we're working on that. And so I think that the Midwest at this point, at least in the next 3 years, is going to have an opportunity to influence at least what the Home Mission Board might do in newer convention areas across the United States. And that'd help everybody here. And a second thing that Bob and I have seen that God is, I think, doing is having the idea of a state student director, rather than it being someone that knows nothing about student work, as it is in many places, that it is an actual local campus director who wears two hats. And Bob and I do that, and it gets kind of old and boring, some of the meetings we have to go to and trips we have to take. But it's nice that I answer to Bob and Bob answers to me. I'd say for 4 to 6 days a year, that's not bad. To be able to have a co-laboring of like-mindedness when it comes to working with students. And we've seen Minnesota and Wisconsin, they're wanting to do this. And they're doing this now in Canada. And they're wanting to do it in Pennsylvania. And they're doing it in other states. And so there is an opportunity in the Midwest to influence what happens in other places. And we just covered your prayers. And I think that's all I need to share. We're going to ask Larry Woods to come up and share a little bit about Michigan. That's the Midwest is the biggest place in the world because people in western Pennsylvania think they're in the Midwest, and people in eastern Colorado think they're in the Midwest. So that's it's a big place. So Larry, you come up and tell us about Michigan and your part of the woods. Part of the woods.
Thank you, Brett. Brett and Bob and I were students here at OU back in 19 when Max came director. And it's been a real joy just to you know, to see what God has done over the years with the lives of students at OU and through the ministries of the places where many of those people have gone. 5 years ago, my wife Joanne and I left to head to East Lansing, Michigan, to Michigan State University, a campus of 42,000 students, and is the largest resident campus in the country, 17,000 students in dorms and another 5,000 living in other university housing. And that's the kind of campus that when we got there, we just, you know, drove around and gawked at it. I mean, it was, you know, it just beat anything we'd ever seen and wondered how in the world we'd ever learn our way around campus. But we went with two things on our heart. One was two verses of scripture that the Lord gave before we left. One was in John 17, where Jesus said to the Father, he said, "I've manifested thy name to the men whom thou gavest me out of the world. Thine they were, and thou gavest them to me, and they have kept thy word." And we went really praying that that God would give us men and women who would come to know him and who would be keepers of his word. And little did we know how much we needed to pray that, for when we got there, they gave us two names of students that were involved in BSU at Michigan State. One of them we couldn't find. The other one was BSU president by default. And on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being spiritual giant, he placed himself at a minus 2. And so, and he was a senior graduating at the end of the year, and so we literally started from scratch. And so we, the other verse that God laid on our heart was 2 Timothy 2:2, which I'm sure most of you probably know. Paul writing to Timothy, "What you've heard from me before many witnesses, and trust the faithful men who will be able to teach others also." And you know, that's four generations of believers through the life of Paul. And we began to realize that that's when spiritual multiplication really begins, is when you see the fourth generation. And it's been a real joy this year to see that spiritual multiplication begin to take place at Michigan State. First year we were there, we found a student named Jeff, and Jeff was a freshman, really open to the Lord, and we began spending time with Jeff. And second year that he was around, why, one of the fellows down the hall came to him and said, "You know, I really noticed some things different about your life, and I just kind of want to know what it is." And so Jeff began to spend some time with him, and Bill gave his life to the Lord. And then this year, Bill found this freshman named Michael, and after Bible study one night, as they spent some time together, Michael gave his life to Christ. And that was a really exciting experience for us because that was the beginning of the fourth generation, and spiritual multiplication had begun in their lives because it had gone from us to Jeff, to Bill, and to Michael. And this has been probably one of the better years that we've had at Michigan State. We've seen more students come to know the Lord this year than the other 4 years put together. And I think there's two things that have been real key in that. One is Bill and two other seniors met together, and we talked, and they began to pray about where God wanted them to live on campus. And so they agreed they wanted to live together, and they waited until everybody had signed up for all the dorms that they were going to live in for next year. And then at the last minute, they went to the housing department and found out which dorm had the fewest people coming back to that dorm, and they knew that's where the most freshmen would be. And they purposefully signed up to live in that dormitory so that they could give their lives this year to reaching freshmen. And then God really raised up for us 21 people who committed themselves to be a part of a share team that would devote themselves and be accountable to one another
in personal relationship evangelism. And so we met together for an hour every other week, and we'd ask nasty little things like, did you spend 6 hours this week in evangelism? Yes or no? Write down what you did during those 6 hours. And we'd pick it up and, you know, check them out. And so we tried to make that a high accountability thing for what we were doing in personal evangelism. And God really used those things to begin, for the first time, I think we can really look forward to a real nucleus of students that will come back in the fall to really carry on the work there at Michigan State. Now, I guess I might as well sing my song for you about Michigan. Everybody else is doing it. I'll throw my 2 cents worth in. Michigan's an interesting place. Michigan is, we went up there and we got there and everybody said, everybody talked about going up north. And I kept saying, where do you think we are? But you can drive 400 miles due north from Lansing and still be in Michigan. Michigan's a very long and narrow state. People, if you live in Michigan and you ask them where they're from, you know, if you hold your hand up like this, it makes the lower peninsula of Michigan, so they do this to form Michigan, lower and upper peninsula. You ask people where they're from, they don't answer you. They say, I'm from right here, you know. And one of the things that was on our heart as we began to pray about Michigan was the fact that Michigan State is located right here. Right in the center of the palm of Michigan. There are over 9.3 million people in the state. If you drew a line across the lower part of the fingers here, there's 6 million of those live south of that line, all concentrated in this one area. And East Lansing sits right in the middle of that. And if you would take a compass to your map and place the point in East Lansing and draw a circle with a 100-mile radius around Lansing, you would hit campuses like Western Michigan with 17,000 students, Ferris State with 8,000, Central Michigan with 17,000, Wayne State with 25,000, Eastern Michigan with 18,000, the University of Michigan with 34,000, of just four-year schools of 8,000 or more students. If you take a corridor that runs from Lansing to, or if you took that whole corridor just in that circle, you'd find over 400,000 college students in that area. Where's Sandy? Sandy Graham, stand up. Where are you? There she is. You have now met all the BSU directors full time in the state of Michigan. And so one of the things that's been on our hearts is to really see Michigan State be a sending place for students to go to those other campuses in Michigan to really begin to reach students in that area. If you took that same compass and increased the radius from 100 miles to 300 miles, you find insignificant hamlets such as Toronto, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Chicago, and Milwaukee, and Detroit, which probably are going to be the majority of the places where many of those students are going to go to get jobs when they graduate. And one of the things that on our heart is not only raising up students to walk with God and be multiplying disciples and to send them out to see student works begin on these other campuses, but also to see them go to places like that are major areas of the country that need to be reached and see them have a vision for planting churches and having a major impact in those significant parts of the country. And so what we're praying for is what everybody else is praying for, that God would send us laborers for his harvest. Thank you.
July 1st of 1978, Sue and I left here, Norman. And it's amazing how many trips started from here in Norman. But we traveled to Greeley, Colorado, to the University of Northern Colorado, and began to minister there on a campus of about 10,000 students. And during the 9 years that we've been there, we've seen a change in 2 state executive directors, 4 state BSU directors, and all kinds of local BSU directors. In fact, at the University of Colorado in Boulder, there have been 7 BSU directors in the time that we've been there. And so the need, as you've heard, and ours isn't a whole lot different. It's just the fact that when we shovel the snow, we can see the mountains. But the need is for people that will come and really invest their lives. And I'm thankful for just the examples of Max and Brett and Bob and Larry and guys like Jim Morrison that you know, that have planted their lives in places and have been willing to stay and through the good and the bad times. You know, in the last 2 years, we've gone through some difficult situations in the state and come to realize some things that I think if you haven't realized, you need to know. And that is basically that about 2 years ago, because of the financial situation in the state of Colorado, basically pulled out support for local VSU ministries. And, you know, as I thought about that, you know, really, I don't think that is unique to the state of Colorado. I believe that when push comes to shove, in whatever situation you're in or plan to be in, when the dollars get tight, Baptist Student Union work will probably be the first to go. And you need to be aware of that. And I think that in realizing that, and realizing some of the things that just Bob said, that, you know, really, if even looking at that, you know, where else would you rather be? And what else could you give your life to that could mean as much? And I'm thankful that, that God has called us to Colorado for what he's done there and is doing, and just the encouragement we have experienced. And I want you to pray, too, for one thing in particular, as well as for laborers, but also Billy Graham will be in Denver July the 17th to the 26th. And we're praying that will not only have an impact on the Denver area, but particularly on students throughout Colorado. It's even been they've called it a Peaks to Plains crusade all the way from Montana down to the southern border of Colorado. And so it's a tremendous opportunity for God to really minister in people's lives and bring people to himself through Billy Graham. One last thing, as Bob mentioned, just about going to a dorm room and being mistaken for a dad. I've had that experience several times, actually. But I think the topper was that when I went to a room one day and knocked and kind of hear some shuffling going on in the room, but nobody answered the door, and knocked again, and finally a sweet mate or somebody came by and said, "Well, I know that they're in there, and so let me knock for you." And so they knocked and even opened the door, and there were these two guys kind of sheepishly sitting there in the room. One of them came out and said, "We thought you guys might be FBI men." Now, that's a guilty conscience.
Even I was mistaken for somebody's dad when I went to Colorado State University, and if I had said that I was, I could have got a better deal on the meal ticket that night. Your parents get a break, you know. But I've been at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, Colorado for 1 year, and prior to that had been in Omaha, Nebraska for 8 years, involved in campus ministry there. And I came to Colorado realizing the situation that John Mark described. One of the things that has never happened to me is I've never been beaten up for the sake of the gospel. Nobody's ever shot guns at me for the sake of the gospel. And you read in the Bible about these guys like in Acts 15, men who have risked their lives for the sake of our Lord Jesus Christ. Or you read over in Philippians about this guy risking his life to complete your service to me. I've never had to risk my life, but if you want to be involved in campus ministry in Colorado, you will risk your bank account. So you need to be aware of that. And I mean, it's like if God wants you to be there, and you know, it's a good place to try and reach people, and the only disadvantage is that you don't get paid for it, is that a good enough reason not to do it? You know, and that was kind of the situation that we were in. But let me tell you about Colorado. We do have things to offer you besides wheat fields. I also lived in Lincoln for about 4 years prior to moving to Omaha, and I remember one time we went to a conference in Estes Park,
Leroy Imes was one of the speakers there in Estes Park. And we drove and drove for, you know, 10 or 12 hours and finally got there. Well, I like to ride a motorcycle, and so several weeks ago, after lunch, my wife and I got on the motorcycle and drove up to Estes Park, had some coffee and pie, and got back before the kids were out of school. And so that's the kind of environment that is there. Currently in Colorado, there is need for campus ministry. Boulder, that John Mark mentioned, Durango, there's a college there, and there's several other smaller colleges where there really could be an effective work that goes on. When we came to Fort Collins, I kind of had in mind kind of a threefold emphasis of what we wanted to try to accomplish. And this wasn't an emphasis that I just kind of made up for the sake of going there. This was just kind of what I want to try to do. Deuteronomy 1:11 says, "May the Lord, the God of your fathers, increase you a thousandfold more than you are and bless you, just as he has promised you." And I'd like to see my life be increased a thousandfold more than it is. I'd settle for less than that. Like to see it increase at all, you know. But, you know, the things that I think are really going to pay off isn't the intramural teams. And, I mean, nothing against intramural teams, but that's not what's going to really count. That's not what's going to really last. But the things that we're trying to accomplish there at CSU is evangelism, personal discipleship and spiritual growth, and disciple making. Now, there's a handful of Southern Baptist students who really don't like what we're trying to do because we're changing some things. And some of them have kind of faded away. But there's more students that are there who are really wanting to try to reach some people. And so we're really encouraged about that. We've done some things differently there at CSU than we would do at other places. In Omaha, there's Creighton University, which is a Catholic university, and the University of Nebraska at Omaha, which is entirely a commuter campus. So at CSU, it's kind of a little bit different atmosphere, a little different flavor. Some of you may have read about the riots and things like that that occurred during college days a couple months ago there at CSU, which really did happen and got national media attention. But one of the things that didn't get media attention was the fact that the evangelical Christian groups seized the opportunity for a major evangelistic thrust. And we brought in a Christian rock group. I've never been really that hot on Christian rock groups. But this particular group was really good, and they were more Christian than they were just in it for the music. And one of the things that they had, the BSU, there's got a little building. It's a two-bedroom house. Across the street and over a couple hundred yards was the mud pits where they had the mud volleyball and mud football during college days. Well, you know, so we thought, you know, we got to hose these people off after they're all muddy. So we put up a big sign, you know, "Rinse here free. Ask about living water." And the first girl... Now, you got to realize, on Friday, it was mainly the girls that were involved in the tournament. That's when I did the rinsing off, and it's a dirty job, but somebody had to do it. And so, but anyway, so this early this morning, this Friday morning, the first girl that asked us about living water, she was drunk by her own admission, because her friend said, "You still drunk?" "Yeah," you know, anyway. But, you know, we got to give people some gospel tracts and, you know, maybe a brief word of testimony. But interesting that people there in Colorado are really open. People have talked about the international ministries in the various places, and there's international students there at CSU also. There's a lot going on in terms of agriculture and water resources, just in terms of CSU. And so it's not uncommon to have people from countries where they need to deal with water resources and agriculture and things like that go there. At our international retreat, we had some students from China, couple of visiting scholars from Iran. Now, what are my chances of going to Iran as a missionary? Pretty slim. But here were these guys who were very gentlemanly, you know, not these wild Iranians that you see on television, but really interested in talking about Christ, you know, learning about him. And so one of the fellows that was going back spoke French fluently. He happened to be working with Dr. Ralph Baker, who was the faculty advisor for the BSU there at CSU. And Dr. Baker told me that this guy spoke fluent French, so we got a French New Testament for this guy, figuring that the chances of getting that into Iran in French were probably greater than if it was in English. I don't know if that was the case or not, but there is opportunity to make disciples of all nations and not leave Colorado. Not that I would want to, or not that I wouldn't want to, or whatever, but there can be a significant impact in a lot of places where I wouldn't be able to go as a missionary just by involvement there. And, you've heard people say that this place is the cutting edge and this other place is really the cutting edge and some places are vanilla, but CSU is really the cutting edge, and Colorado in general. But anyway, we're glad to be there, and we would covet your prayers for anything that you want to pray about anybody else that has shared. Just pray the same thing for us, and we need it too, and it'll work. Thank you.
Wyoming is a little different than these places. I think everybody could say that, but somebody said one time that Moses spent 40 years up where we live, that's pretty true. I think when I moved to Wyoming, it was the first time I'd ever heard of something called a wind chill factor. Some of you have heard of that, but I moved up there from San Antonio, Texas, and all of our snow blows into Nebraska and Colorado. We don't have to shovel any snow there. I was pretty happy in San Antonio, Texas about 12 years ago, and went to a conference that Henry Blackaby was sharing in. And Henry had just left a church, a large church in Southern California, to a church in Canada of 11 people. Totally convinced that that's what God had wanted for his life. And I knew that God was beginning to do some things in my own heart. And so I spent some time with Henry after this conference, and I talked to him, and he said, "Dave, one thing that I think you have to be willing to do," he said, "I was willing to go plant my life in Saskatchewan and never be heard of again. Just invested in lumberjacks." Well, I knew that I'd heard of Wyoming, but I really didn't know anything about it. Didn't know really where it was. I thought it was near the Canadian border somewhere. But that was what God used to just begin to urge me into that area. I'd been praying for a school where students would be available. Everyone is available in Laramie. We do have, most of our students are commuters, but they live within 2 miles of the campus. Our campus is strategic. We have 1 4-year university in the state of Wyoming. I think that's the only claim that can be made by any state. I think that makes our campus strategic. You might think it makes it small. I think it makes it strategic because almost everyone that goes to college in Wyoming comes to the university. And anyone that goes into public education in Wyoming comes to the University of Wyoming. Anyone that basically will probably end up in Washington, D.C., or in any part of our government in our state will come through the University of Wyoming. I have learned that the mega cities and all of the people in these places are exciting, but you don't need a lot of people to make disciples. In our state, we have 475,000 people. That's the whole state. I don't know how many square miles we are, but I think we're the seventh largest state area-wise. So they're scattered. About 2.5 times, I think there are about 2.5 more kinds of antelope in Wyoming than our people. We are very sparsely populated. One of the things that's exciting about the university, because it's the only 4-year school, is I think we really, realistically, have an opportunity to impact the entire state.
I really believe we can do that. And I see Laramie, I see the University of Wyoming as a very strategic place in our state. 37% of people this year at the University of Wyoming approximately will be freshmen. That's exciting to think of. Out of 10,000 students that we will have, almost 4,000 will be freshmen. Our state, like some of the others, is very sparsely populated with believers. In our city, on any given Sunday morning, there are about 7% of the population in church. Probably about 5% of the university is evangelical, and we have identified about 30 Southern Baptists on campus out of the 10,000. Well, we're excited about that, because that gives us an opportunity to work with people who have very little, if any, background in the gospel. And we found that they're very hungry. They're very eager to learn and to grow. There's not any church in Laramie reaching college students. We have no navigators. We have no campus crusade. And so basically, you know, God has entrusted to us a ministry of raising up disciples and multiplying disciples in our campus. And we're excited about that. We have a real freedom in Wyoming. I sometimes would like to have a little more accountability, but our state director, right now about 3% of his job is student work. And so basically, whatever we want to do, he allows us to do. There's no reason for that, and that's 3.5 years ago. All of the funding to our BSU, like Colorado, was eliminated. And so we raised all of our support there. That really gives us a freedom that I had not expected. In fact, if you're considering going to work in an area like ours, where you will have to raise your support, and most of the places we talked about tonight, you have to do that, I think that's much more exciting than having a salary, because I've had both. It's more exciting sometimes. what's really exciting about it is the people that support you are really partners in your ministry. And that is very exciting and very encouraging. I wouldn't trade anything for the personal communication with those people who share in our lives in that way. Most of our work is, like was mentioned in some of these other places, a real sending kind of ministry. We are a declining population in Wyoming right now. And most of the students do not find jobs in Wyoming. They find them in the Denver area, or they find them elsewhere out of state. And so ours is a real sending kind of ministry. And I think if you basically are in a college ministry, and if God's leading you this way, you need to understand that most of the people you work with do not stick around and stay with you. But it's interesting, I think Debbie was sharing this, that God's grace is sufficient. And he provides and makes up for that when that relationship is cut, because you still can keep in contact with these people even though they're not right close hand, most of them. I think one of the real keys in student ministry in our part of the country is longevity. I think you have got to be willing to plant yourself as though you're there permanently. You're not going anywhere else, because this is where God wants you. I've only been there for 11 years, and yet I think there are only 4 people in the state that have been there longer than that, and they're 90 years old. I haven't been mistaken for anybody's father in our family, just a few times. We have some needs in our area. You know, we do not look like the Southern Californias, anything like that. And yet we have students who are influential wherever they go, and they will make a difference and they will make an impact wherever they are. We have a freedom to have staff as long as they can raise support. Right now I have 3 others who are with me on staff there. If anyone could raise support, we could have 5 others, because we have that kind of freedom. And we have areas of ministry in which we could use people for them. I think a thing I'd like for you to pray for, though, for our state and for our area, is that we desperately need some churches with whom we can put students in when they get out of school, because as you know, that environment is critical. And for many of them that graduate, that stay in Wyoming, there is not that kind of fellowship. And like Paul said, we feel like sometimes our labor is in vain if you do not go unto Christ. And I think one of the keys to that is some people in churches with whom these others can identify with. And just to close, I share Jeremiah 12:11. Says, they have made it a desolation. Desolate, it mourns to me. The whole land is made desolate, but no man lays it to heart. And I just ask that you pray that God might really put that on your heart. If you're looking for a place to minister, there are a lot of places like Wyoming, Colorado, Midwest, that God could use your life. Thank you.
Dorm and knock on the door, and one of the kids come to the door, and it is your son. You know you are. You know, every once in a while, someone will ask, "How long do you think you can work on the college campus?" And I say, "Well, I don't know, but I don't feel any separation from students. I don't see why you can't be more effective the older you get." Now, granted, you know, sleeping on gym floors and riding all night on buses and some things like that may not be quite as exciting. Breaking horses at some point. But you know, I think one of the things that student work needs that I've felt is that people who will go and plant their life and stay there. First budget I ever looked at OU, we had $100 a year for program. And I don't share this with very many people, but I know even 6 years ago in checking with accountants, we'd had over $250,000 that year to come through here. And it's a long way from $100 a year to program. And at the time, we did have a little other. They had, I think, in that same budget, some $800 for socials or something like that. But we had a budget of about $21,000 when I came, which was to take care of three salaries and also everything that we were to do. And one of the things that it takes time to build a work. You can go in and reach some people, but in order to build the support, and one of the things that Sandra and I prayed about when we came, the fact that God allows us to be in the South, I don't apologize to anyone. Any of you, I don't care where you're from in the world, you can sit up all night with me and I'll not be intimidated the least in where I am. There's a difference between a strategy and the leading of God. You know, like I talked to Tom Wolfe, one of the men I greatly respect and am so grateful to God for his vision for the world, as he talks about the primate cities of the world. Going to the primate cities. And every year they go to Belize. I said, "Tom, for God's sake, why do you go to Belize? Believe in what you believe." And he said, "Because God led us." Said, "Well, that's a good answer." Let me tell you, you get your neat little strategies all figured out, and I guarantee you God will blow that right out your ears one of these days. I remember 1975 going to Holland and spending a day and a half with Gert Dernbaugh, and I had it all figured out. He asked me to get aside and figure out the strategies where we wanted to be 10 years from now. And so I did that, and where Brett was going to be and how many workers he was going to watch over. And God just didn't lead that way. He just didn't. Now, I love the idea of the primate cities and going to strategic places. But, you know, it makes sense to me that if God is trying to do something, which he is, in trying to reach the world, why bypass Southern Baptist? I mean, that doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, if I'm going to go fishing and one pool's got five and another's got 2,500, now one may be on the beach and one may have the mountains, but I'm going to put my hook where there are a lot of fish. Now, granted, I believe that God has already invested in a lot of people in the South. I mean, we've got 34,000 churches among Southern Baptists, most of them in the South. That's why they're called Southern Baptists. And I just believe that there are a lot of people that have a start. God already has some investment in that we could raise up for laborers. And I'm for the primate cities of the world, but there's no such thing as a campus that's not primate. The whole idea of a primate city is a city in which 15% of the population of that nation lives in city, where people come for education, where the people are trained. Well, that's true of every campus. I don't know of a campus anywhere in the world but what people come in from around it to go to school. I mean, that's where they come from. 86% of the students in the United States, 86% of the students in the United States will go to a college in the state where they graduate from high school. I mean, I think one of the great strategic campuses in the nation is University of Wyoming. Why? Because if you're going to graduate in Wyoming, you're going to graduate from University of Wyoming. I mean, if you don't, you're not going to get a degree. I mean, you don't have any other option. One of the great primate campuses in America is the University of Wyoming. And God has raised up some laborers there. You know right now who's working at Stanford? BSU director? He's from University of Wyoming. And I just want to say this to you about the South. There are a lot of resources here. And one of the things that Sandra and I determined when we came here, we do not want to live for ourselves. And we are at the University of Oklahoma. We have great opportunities, and we're going to try to do something from the University of Oklahoma for the rest of the world. So we get together with our board and say, we would like to have another worker. They were paying me $8,000 at the time, and they didn't feel like they could afford another one. And so I said, well, will you allow me to give away one half of my salary? I can find somebody that'll come for $4,000, and we'll raise the rest of it. And so they talked about that. And they said, well, what if it doesn't come in? I said, that's beyond you. That's not your problem. All you have to do is vote tonight if we can do it. And they said, well, if that's what you want to do. So we did. The next year, that other fellow and I got together and we said, we went to the board and said, could we give away two-thirds of our salary? I mean, we can have six for the price of two and let them raise it. And so we did that. And we did that for years. For 8 years, we raised most of our support. Today, after the state finally came and Bob Lee came and said, we want to pay your salary. And I said, Bob, I don't want you to pay my salary. I don't want other people on the staff having to raise their support, and yet you're paying my salary. So we held them off for 2 years, and they finally voted and said, we're going to pay your salary. Well, you know what they decided to do? Take it out of the budget and put it in my salary. That left a huge hole. So I said, Bob, can I continue to raise what I've been raising and put it in the budget such that we can help pay the salary of these others? I do that till this day. I feel like in the South, there's tremendous opportunity because there are already people who have come to know the Lord and could get some help and become laborers. You know, I look at places in the world, as I said, we decided we will do everything we can to try to help other people. That's one of the reasons we have the Tape Library. We do a lot of things at OU that go out of the OU budget, like whatever money doesn't come in for this conference, OU, BSU will pick it up, and it will be some. And we decided years ago that we will do things like through tapes and other ministries and conferences and anything we can to try to help the cause of Jesus Christ in this country. Now, right now, at the University of Oklahoma, there are a number of people on staff. And we have tried to think, how could we help other areas? As you've already heard tonight, a number of people have gone from here. And 5 years ago, we started taking mission trips to Los Angeles. In the past 4 years, we have had 25 seniors who've moved to Los Angeles to help two churches. These were people who are planning to be laymen. You can even look at places like Hope Baptist Church and some of the places where the church planning is going on. And these churches would not be where they are if it were not for the Bob Brandons, who came out of Margaret Shelton ministry, who came out of OU and places like that, if it were those ministries and the church planting ministries would not be where they are if it were not for some people who had a fantastic start before they ever arrived at those churches. And I just know we've been trying to say to our students, there are two ways to get a job. One is just get a job and hope for the best spiritually. And before God, we try to get every student we can to leave Oklahoma. We don't want them to stay in Oklahoma. Now, some will anyway. And a lot of those people are building the financial base, not only for us, but for to help with many of the people that have gone from here to ministries. There are thousands and thousands of dollars that go out of Norman, Oklahoma every month. And from our alums, not just for here, but for other works. And so we've tried to build a base here. And many people that stay help financially to support ministries in other places. And so we try to say to our students, there are two ways to get a job. One is you can just get a job and hope for the best spiritually. You know, just go to Tulsa and get a job and hope you can find a live ministry there. Now, I think that's backwards. So we say to our students, why don't you go where there's something going on you want to be a part of it, and there plant your life. Go there and look for a job. If you're a school teacher, there's school teachers in every city in America. If you're an accountant, you can get a job anywhere, basically. I know Larry Clements sitting here. He came in from Los Angeles, came into the office about 2 years ago. And I said to him, Larry, what are you doing? He's sending schools out, and where are you going? He said, well, I've got an offer from Wichita, Kansas. I said, do you want to go to Wichita, Kansas? I said, now, if you do, we'll try to help you find something that's alive there spiritually. If there's something there, I don't know that much about it, but is that what you want to do? And he said, no, you know what I'd rather do than anything is I want to go to Los Angeles and be a part of the ministry. And I said, well, then go. He said, I only have one job offer, and it's from Wichita. I said, turn it down. Before God, this is a free country. I mean, jobs are tight. Jobs are tight, but they're not that tight. Why don't you go to Los Angeles and see if you can get a job? He did. It wasn't long until he had two offers, and he's there now. The South has a great opportunity to supply laborers. You know, one of the things I think we have to ask ourselves is, what time is it? Now, I'm not talking about right now. It's late. But it's a good question to ask yourself. What time is it? It's kind of like, what position? You know, if you're on a football field, you know why they have those line markers? To help the teams know where they are and what they're to do. And if you've got a first down and you're on the opposing team 5-yard line, you don't drop back and punt. I mean, knowing what time it is and where you are can help tell you what to do. Now, I think one of the great needs, as I've heard here tonight, and it didn't surprise me at all, I knew we'd hear that before we walked in this room, the tremendous need today is for laborers. One of the great places in the earth, the fastest, quickest place to raise up laborers is in the South. Now, if God leads you to some place in the South, you don't have to apologize to the people from California or any other place. Before God, I hope God will scatter us all over the world. But wherever God places you, wherever He gives you a burden to go and minister, there you can raise up people. You know, I'm grateful to God that He's placed me where I am. I don't feel that I have to justify that. I'm grateful to God I'm in the South, that I'm in a place where this fall we'll have a number of kids, and this kid has been in a Baptist church, and moms and dads and Sunday school teachers and coaches and others have invested in him all of his life, and he arrives on his campus, and unless there's somebody here from the Baptist Student Union, there's a very good chance he'll be lost to the cause of Jesus Christ. But we can be here and go after those people, and not only after those, but we've found year after year after year, many of the people that we reach are people who are not Southern Baptists. I mean, I know we had a mission deal a few years ago, group to go to Spain. We had two students to go a year before. One of them was a Catholic. The other one was a Presbyterian. I mean, we reached students of all kinds and stripes here. But we do have a great opportunity to help supply laborers for the world. Now, the beautiful thing, and one of the things we tried to do in arranging this tonight, is to hear from people from a number of different places. Every one of them is where God's placed him, and I hope, if God gives me the privilege, there's nothing I'd rather do than die in Norman, Oklahoma. I believe the greatest opportunity for my life, my gifts, and my abilities, as for now, that the greatest way for me to serve the cause of Jesus Christ is to spend my life in Norman, Oklahoma. And sometimes people will know, ask me, well, do you think you'll be there 3 years from now because my son or daughter starts? I tell you, as long as Jesus is the Lord of the harvest, he tells his laborers where to work in the harvest. I don't have any other plans, but I can't make anybody the promise that I'll be here when school starts this fall. I intend to follow the will of God wherever he puts me. And as for now, I'm grateful I've had 20 years at the University of Oklahoma. Gene Moore and I talk about it every once in a while. He says, you know, if Baptists pull a plug tomorrow, it's been a fun 20 years, hasn't it? And that is an option. That is an option. Okay. It's been a fun time. I wish we could hear from many others of you tonight. There are many of you that could have some things to say. You know, I am excited, personally, that we can help. Like this fall, we have 8 students going to Berkeley. Fact is, Boyd Pelley here just found out last week. He's the new BSU director at Berkeley. They're going to allow something in California that I don't think we have in most places. I mean, there'll probably be 4 or 5 of our students be working in Berkeley next fall. We're trying some team effort things. So I'm grateful that we can have a part in help supplying laborers. Now, if you're in California, you know what's going to happen? It's going to shock some of you. But God's going to call some people from California back to Oklahoma sometime. I mean, you can't figure that out in your little strategy. But God is going to do that. And I just want to warn you, it'll happen. God is the Lord of the harvest. He knows the abilities. You know, I look at Bob Anderson. I've often shared this. And Brett Young. I can honestly say, I don't know of ministries anywhere in the world in recent years that I think have produced more. I mean, right now, we have 2 people on our staff from Kansas State. I look around at what God has done in Nebraska and Kansas State, places like this. Let me just ask you, how many of you here tonight have just been touched as a result of, say, OU or the ministry at Kansas or Nebraska? Would you just raise your hand? Okay, I believe to go to the wheat fields of Kansas or the plains of Nebraska or in Dinky, Oklahoma, the only way you'd ever know where it is, if you've heard of the football team or you happen to be going from Dallas to Oklahoma City, the only way you'd ever know where Norman is. But God knows where it is, and he sends people.